this meeting to order. There's still too much fun going on here at the front table. Jocularity, yes. Let's get back to business. We've reached item number six, 2015-16 sport fishing regulation proposals. This is a briefing coming to us in a number of different segments. This is our new approach to the massive job of looking at the many, many rule proposals we can consider. Craig Burley, would you like to introduce the subject?
Please. Thank you, Madam Chair, Commissioners, Director Anderson, Deputy Director Storr. For the record, Craig Burley, Fish Management Division Manager. And this is the first briefing for sport rules for this year. And what we'd like to do today is talk about the process that we've developed starting this year for the next 3 years, go over the timeline and public involvement that we're in the middle of now. Then we'll go through the regulation proposals that we have that we're asking the commission to consider. And during the process or during the presentation, we'll have time for the commissioners to ask questions of staff on the particular proposals. So again, yes, a new process, a three-year cycle that we're starting this year. For the first year, we'll be focused on regulations in the Columbia Basin. Next year, we'll be looking at freshwater rules in the Puget Sound and coastal region. And then in 2016, we'll be looking at regulations associated with marine finfish, forage fish, and shellfish. And this new schedule is in response to the overwhelming number of proposals that we received in the 2012 regulation cycle. We had almost 300 proposals, and we're asking the commission to look at about 70 proposals. And we felt that if we could reduce those numbers, it would give the public, staff, and the commission more opportunity to be deliberative on the regulations that we bring before you. So the proposals that we're looking at either address critical conservation needs or provide recreational opportunity. And we started this in May, the month of May. We solicited proposals from the public. We sent out emails, press release, as well as on our website. We continue to use the agency's website to solicit those proposals. And at this point, we're in the portion of the process where we're collecting public comment. We started that on August 21st, and our public comment period on the proposals will extend through October 16th. We also have concluded regional public meetings, five of those during the months of August and September, and today briefing the commission. Then after today, we will have an additional a public hearing currently scheduled for November, and the schedule has a December commission action. These rules then would take effect with the next pamphlet cycle, which would be July 1 of 2015. The proposals we received were 166 proposals. Staff reviewed those proposals, and in some instances, we received multiple proposals for the same water body. Proposals were combined. We identified 32 of those proposals that we recommended move forward for further consideration by the commission. However, we also included all of the proposals we received on our website, and we are allowing public to provide comment on those proposals that we had identified recommending not to move forward further in the process. So we're receiving comment on all the proposals that we've received. And then another change that we've made, and that's in the schedule and how we'll present those proposals. We have our regional fish program managers here that will be able to brief you on the proposals that are in their regions. Chris Donnelly, our inland fish program manager, will start with the basin-wide proposals. There's also one statewide proposal he'll talk about. We've built in a break if necessary. If not, we're happy to move through the regions. And then the last thing I wanted to mention is in your notebooks, you have under tab 6 the commission summary sheet as well as the brief narrative for each of the proposals. And then finally at the back are the tables of the detailed regulations associated with our stream strategy regulation that we'll be talking about further. And so there I would pause briefly if there are any questions on proposal, process, timeline before we move into the specifics of the rules.
Any questions? No? Thank you.
Thank you. I'll cover Columbia Basin-wide proposals, beginning with the technical changes in the WAC code. These aren't anything earth-shattering to review. They're in your notebook if you're interested. Misspellings, misnaming of lakes, a few technical fixes that we'll cover. Inside changes to the WAC language in this rulemaking process. Number two, remove internal combustion motors.
Got it.
This basically is a maneuver to, in those places that are impractical to run a jet motor or any internal combustion motor, remove those from the pamphlet to eliminate any potential issues with individuals thinking that it would be possible to run them up those bodies of water. These will also be discussed a little bit more at length by our regional staff as they highlight in stream strategy. Black Friday trout opener. We've had a reasonably successful program in Southwest Washington where we stocked advanced-sized trout and then had an opener the Friday after Thanksgiving. We've seen some follow of that by recreational anglers. The following continues to grow. We were thinking that we had December 1 opening lakes in eastern Washington that could be now set as a Black Friday opener as well to give us a larger suite of lakes to market for this fishery from a license sales perspective and more recreational opportunity. 10-cara fly fishing gear. This came before the commission last spring as a petition to address changing the fly fishing only rules to include 10-cara fly fishing gear. At the time the rules the petition was then put off by the commission and asked of staff to address that in the rulemaking process, which is where we are today. It's a basically a primitive form of fly fishing. It just includes a fixed leader on the tip of the rod. There's really no issue or difference between this than standard fishing other than the line and leader that's used. So we will modify the WAC language and pamphlet language to include this if approved. Statewide general walleye rules. The current general walleye rule is 5 fish minimum size 16 inches, no more than 1 over 21 inches or 22 inches, I believe. This will change the walleye rule to 8 fish, 12 inch minimum, more than 1 over 22 inches. The thinking is that from a biological perspective, we can see more harvest or exploitation on those populations without damaging their biological productivity, as well as increasing opportunity to harvest fish. This will affect a couple large reservoirs that don't currently have that rule, the largest being Banks Lake. So there may be some public comment to that extent as this process goes along. Modify some year-round rules to March 1 openers. This is a similar line of thinking to Black Friday, from the concept that we are thinking about developing openers that are marketable to increase angler use, get some excitement around fisheries. The lakes mostly that are contained with this within this program, inside your notebook you can see the list, are within Region 3, the Yakima area. It's traditionally been stocked with trout late February and had an unofficial opener that occurred the first week in March. We would just like to make a March 1 opener that allows retailers to focus around that opener, as well as we can develop some promotions inside of Fish Washington to try to increase usership. Stream strategy for the Columbia Basin. This is the same strategy that you saw, I believe, two rule cycles ago with Western Washington, where a stream is closed unless listed in the pamphlet as open. This also gives us the chance at this point to adjust the rules based on conservation need, and it will standardize all of Eastern Washington, the Columbia Basin, with what's been done in Western Washington. One thing of note that will come up inside of this as you hear the regional staff review some of these rules that will change inside stream strategy, there is discussion about mandatory steelhead retention in segregated and some integrated steelhead populations within the Columbia Basin. This is the basic format, or the six options, five options of ways to categorize streams. Put that up there to give you some idea of how it was broken out as a stream strategy approach for Eastern Washington. And excuse my error, there are six options there. This is also contained in your notebook. And with that, I'd open it to questions.
Any questions from the commission? I think you've explained it well. Oh, Commissioner Holtzmiller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you go back a slide? You kind of lost me on that one.
My apologies. That's difficult to see. In the stream strategy, we had this matrix of choices and basically asked regional staff and field staff to categorize their streams under the stream strategy to fit these six options.
Okay.
These are different than what was used in Western Washington because of some of the difference that you have in summer steelhead and all those things, but they are consistent across regions 1, 2, and 3.
Gotcha now. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Hi, John.
Madam Chair, John Whalen, Regional Fish Program Manager out of Spokane for Region 1.
And Jeff Korth for Region 2.
To touch a little bit on some of the points that were made earlier, for Region 1, as far as some of the basin-wide proposals, the region has 19 proposals that we're looking at taking off the internal combustion motor restriction. And we have four of the five that we're proposing as far as opening for early, so the Black Friday openers, again, some additional opportunity for anglers. Proposals that I'll talk about during this presentation for Region 1 include the Snake River Sturgeon proposal, a proposal to take two lakes that are down in the Toucan Impoundment area down in Columbia County and open those up for year-round, and then also the stream strategy components for Region 1. The Sturgeon proposal is essentially covering the Snake River above Ice Harbor, and the proposal as is to go to a catch and release. Currently, there are some harvest opportunities above Ice Harbor as well as below Ice Harbor. And what we're looking at here is dealing with what we've seen as far as relatively sporadic opportunities for augmentation of the population there. What limited information we have shows that it's very infrequent spawning, and that the ability to have the populations in those lower reservoirs be able to sustain themselves. So we're looking at eliminating harvest that we think will assist in rebuilding those populations and align with the rest of the Columbia River and other Snake River impoundments relative to conservation issues for sturgeon. Region 1, a couple of the lakes I talked about will go from, you saw previously where we're looking at moving some into the March 1 opener. In this particular instance, most of the lakes in the Toucan impoundments are March 1 openers, so we're looking at moving to Spring and Blue Lake to year-round opportunity. And this will really provide later in the fall, particularly for hunters that are visiting the Hoot and Wildlife Area, an opportunity to fish. And additionally, these impoundments are managed with hatchery trout, so a real good opportunity to have late-season fisheries. Region 1, as far as stream strategies, just to orient the commission members, our District 1 is the northern three counties, Ferry, Stevens, and Ponderay. District 2 in the middle with Lincoln, Whitman, and Spokane, and the four counties down south in our District 3, which would be Columbia, Osceola, Garfield, and Walla Walla counties. What I'll go through as far as the stream strategies is kind of a brief overview and then highlight some of the elements that are in the stream strategies for Region 1, covering primarily where they are within the three districts. Highlights really, if you looked at the previous slide that Chris talked about as far as the codes, we really can break out Region 1 into kind of District 1 and 2 being resident fish opportunities, and then District 3 being our anadromous zone. So primarily in Districts 1 and 2, we'll have A or B codes relative to resident opportunity using either bait or not allowing bait. And then down in District 3, the ability to have protections in place for anadromous salmonids, juveniles primarily. One of the issues that we'll talk about on the Toucan is a proposal in the stream strategies to redo the definition of what constitutes where the Toucan begins. The standard definition for the mouth would be at the two northern, most outer points, drawing a line. As you can see here, there has been some confusion with anglers as far as where they actually are, and where the Toucan regulations versus the Snake River regulations are. So this proposal will be to better clarify that. The hatchery steelhead mandatory retention component, we've got several pieces within our stream strategies in Southeast where we're looking at proposing this. The reason is largely to reduce proportion of hatchery origin influence, and we'll propose this for the snake, the Walla Walla, the Touche, and the Grand Ron, where we have a Wallawa stock, which is a segregated program. And we're also proposing it for the Toucan River, where we have an integrated program with endemic stock steelhead. For most of these, again, it's to try to address PHAS and try to remove hatchery origin fish to the emphasis and extent we can. On the Grand Ron, I'll make a couple of notes here. One is on the lower river, basically the lower 2.5 miles or so, there's a mandatory release of all steelhead year-round during fishing. And what we would propose there would be is that there would be an opportunity to harvest up to 3 hatchery steelhead, and in the upper portion go for a mandatory retention. In the Toucan, we've got, as I mentioned, the endemic program, and we would be looking at instituting a mandatory retention there for hatchery steelhead to again deal with the PHAS. Two-pole opportunity in the lower portion of the Palouse River, basically from the mouth of the Palouse up to the Palouse Falls. We're looking at doing that from June 16th to August 31. And this provides a little bit of a different opportunity. The main issue here would be is a very low interaction potential with adults and juveniles for listed stocks, but the ability to harvest predators such as bass, channel catfish, and walleye, which falls in line with the previous regulation that the commission passed to enhance harvest on these. The other one to look at up in District 1 is looking, for example, up at Sullivan Creek, where we are looking at proposing some regulations to really enhance conservation for Westlip cutthroat. So in the lower portion of the Sullivan Creek, we're looking at going to barbless hooks, where now that currently is not a requirement. Increase the limit for eastern brook trout up to 10, which is a fairly standard for eastern brook trout in Ponderay County streams, and then look at releasing all cutthroat in that zone. So with that, if there's any questions, we'd be certainly glad to address those.
Any questions? Nope. Very clear. Thank you.
What do I have? Okay. Region 2, most of the changes for the regular regulations can be sort of put in three categories. There's quite a few of them that are just for consistency's sake. There's a number that are for changing conditions, some environmental conditions, some just changes in the fisheries, and then there's some new opportunities. Isn't that a great picture?
It is.
That was just this opening day. You know, on opening day, the kids just love getting those stickers. It's been a big, big draw. Extending fishing opportunities through the month of October up in Okanagan County. We had a number of lakes up there that over the years, a closing date had been set either at the end of September or at the end of October. It really didn't make sense anymore due to changing conditions when those fisheries closed, so we decided to standardize them all at the end of October. This change for a couple of three, four lakes here in Chelan and Okanagan County have to do with our continuing battle against reproducing brook trout in places that they become overabundant. The interesting one, so it's new for Merritt Myrtle Schaefer in Chelan County. We've had it on Tiffany for a while, but we actually tried to focus more of the harvest on the brook trout by making the cutthroat catch and release. We've had that on there for roughly a half a dozen years, I think. Hasn't made a bit of difference. There was no reason to not harvest some cutthroat. We won't hurt the population, so we're now allowing two cutthroat in addition to the brook trout. Green, upper and lower Green Lakes. These have been some interesting lakes. We actually manage two different types depending on the season. When they're ice covered in the winter, we actually have statewide rules, ice fishing, and it's pretty popular. We don't have a lot of lakes where we have good ice fishing. These are a couple of good ones. And then when the ice comes off, we actually manage them as quality fisheries, selective gear rules, catch and release, and we can maintain enough, good enough population of trout, both quality and size and number, to pull that off. Originally, this selective gear rule fish portion of it, when the ice was off, would start April 1. We no longer have ice in March anymore. Climate change, I suppose. At any rate, give the statewide hardware bait anglers 1 month. They can clean that lake out pretty good. So we're going to move the date back on the ice fishing and add an additional month on the quality waters fishery. The lower photograph there illustrates pretty well the length people go to ice fish. That ice wasn't quite good enough to really get out and walk, so they put themselves in a canoe. I watched them. They pulled their way out to the middle of the lake. And then they got a little brave and started getting out of the canoe. I left before they may have gone in. This is another consistency regulation. Two small lakes, Sidley Lake and Molson, very near to one another. One had statewide, one had a more conservative limit. They're both really only capable of the more conservative limit, so we're going to reduce Molson down to two fish. Two fish, they're in there long enough, you get some pretty nice looking fish like the upper one. We had quite a number of lakes, 11 in total, down in Grant County that were more or less either parts of chains of lakes that were primarily trout management or had been good trout lakes in the past that no longer merited trout management. So there was 11 lakes that were changing to year-round season, and there's two of them that needed to be aligned with the daily limit, the statewide daily limits and minimum size. Primarily, they'll be managed now for most of them just for mixed species or most of them just for warm water fish. There's a couple of them that we can still pull off a little bit of a trout fishery, so they'll be mixed species. Yeah, this is another consistency. These lakes were kind of around the board in opening, closing, and rules. We wanted to adjust the season in the entire chain to be fourth Saturday, the general opener, through at the end of October. It'll just improve people's overall understanding of what they're getting into when they go up to fish those lakes and avoid the business of thinking the regulations were the same when they're not now. Rufus Woods. Rufus Woods has quite a bit of notoriety as one of the triploid trout monster fish origins. Most of that had to do in the past when there were several commercial net pen operations that work out of Rufus Woods. Rufus Woods, by the way, is from Chief Joseph Dam up to Grand Coulee Dam, so it's not in the anadromous zone. It's just a resident fishery. The former, and all of these net pen operations are on the Colville Reservation side of the reservoir, so they're run through the Colville tribe. In the past, there's been quite a few, I'll just say, call them escapes of fish from those net pens, and there would get to be at times quite a fishery for these escaped triploid fish. And there were several state records. I don't know if the current state record is coming out of there. I think it finally escaped us. But, you know, fish like that boy is holding were not all that uncommon. Mostly those fish would hang around the net pens and eat fish food that came through the net pens from the operation. At any rate, the new owners have done a much better job. We don't see nearly the numbers of fish in the reservoir. And the other part is the Colville tribe actually purchases usually around 15,000, maybe up to 20,000 fish a year to release in there, which is just a dab compared to what some of those escapes might have been. But it still provides a fishery. We also, the DFW and the Colville tribe, has an agreement that to the extent possible, we will keep our regulations consistent. The Colvilles did not want chumming allowed, which we had chumming in Rufus Woods. Chumming was an artifact from in the past. We used to have a lot of entrainment of kokanee from FDR, Lake Roosevelt. We no longer see that happening. We don't really need the chumming. And in fact, people will go and fish around those net pens now and chum and actually have better success at catching those relatively few fish. So we want to make it a little more challenging, spread the fishing out, and be consistent with the Colvilles. Upper Wheeler Reservoir, this is a new permanent fishery in Chelan County. It's a fly fishing only fishery, the first and only one that Chelan County has. It was an interesting process to get here in that the lake, Upper Wheeler Reservoir, is actually part of an irrigation district. It's on private ground. The Wenatchee Valley fly fishers were instrumental in talking to the irrigation district and helping us get public access to the reservoir. In the past, far in the past, long before my time even, it had been open to the public. The district had trouble with crowds and fires and things like that, so they had shut the public out. So getting back in there was somewhat of a coup. But there were some restrictions. Basically, the Fly Club convinced the district that fly fishermen and the club would look after the private property in a better way than what they had experienced in the past. And so fly fishing only, catch and release, the club stops in and picks up litter and things like that. And we ran this on a temporary circuit for about 3 years, and the district was so happy they said, go ahead and make a permanent. Wapato Lake, this is one of those rare lakes in the state that can do it all, so to speak. We run a really good trout fishery in the spring, early summer. And then it's turned into a pretty fantastic warm water game fish fishery, too. The problem was we used to have, around about the end of July, we would put a selective gear rule on the water to protect the remaining trout so that we'd get some carryover into the next season. We didn't really have any evidence that was working, and it was really working against the warm water anglers who needed to use bait and barbed hooks and so forth to make sure that they had access to the abundant bluegill, crappie, bass fishery in the lake. Typically, the trout are pretty segregated in space, and most people are not trout fishing by the end of July anyhow. So we propose to take the selective gear rule off, see how the trout fare, and give the warm water anglers a chance at it. This should help also keep those warm water populations in better balance. Now here's one for eastern brook trout where we're going to go the opposite way. We wanted to create a quality eastern brook trout fishery. To do that, we're using triploid brook trout, so they won't be reproducing, they won't become overabundant, and we'll go to a we'll reduce the limit to a single fish limit, add selective gear rules, prohibit internal combustion orders, you know, the kind of rules that we'd have on any quality fishery. And that brings us to stream strategy. Overall, in stream strategy review for Region 2, we had two basic things that we found. One was, under the old methodology, where unless we said it was closed, it was open to statewide rules, we found a whole bunch of tributaries to things that had been either closed or had been selective gear or catch and release fisheries that had just by default fallen to statewide rules, and it was really inappropriate to have them. So for those kind of streams, we switched from statewide rules to either catch and release, usually catch and release statewide or selective gear rules. And then where appropriate, where we had issues with overabundant eastern brook, we would put on additional limits of eastern brook, either raise the limit or not make them part of the typical trout limit. The other way, which kind of ends up in the same place, were places that were closed to fishing, that we no longer felt really needed the pressure. A lot of these things had been closed back in the bull trout listing days, and it was an artifact of not having any information on bull trout. So wherever we thought there could potentially be a problem, essentially we had closed the tributaries. So after over 10 years now have passed since then, we have quite a bit more information. We have run some fisheries that have been in areas that had bull trout, watched the populations of bull trout essentially not go down for sure. Some of them stayed level. Some of them were actually seeing increasing populations of bull trout. So we feel pretty confident that we can open up a lot of these tributaries under catch and release selective gear rules and not have a big impact to the bull trout. Usually, or any place where there's steelhead smolts there, we have a catch and release on rainbow. And statewide limits if we do allow any retention on the other species of trout in there. Again, if there's eastern brook trout there that merit the more aggressive removal, we go for that too. I do have a couple of examples that I'll point out, and if you want to, in your pages of stream strategy, you can actually go and see how this is going to work out. Otherwise, you can just maybe jot them down for future reference. So in the first instance that I talked about, a conservation move where we're actually decreasing opportunity from a statewide bait, hook, barbed hook fishery to a more of a quality selective gear rule, catch and release on rainbow. Good examples in Chelan County would be a chum stick on page 53, the Peshastin above Ruby Creek on page 58. What you'll see there is, maybe I gotta go there myself. Okay, I'm on page 58 on Peshastin Creek. You see all species go to selective gear rules. The rainbow go to a catch and release because of the presence of steelhead. If you go down to the eastern brook, you'll see there's not actually an increase in the eastern brook limit, but we don't make the eastern brook part of the trout limit, so you can fish for cutthroat. Once you're up to 5 cutthroat, you have to quit because now you've retained a limit of trout, the limit for that particular creek. But any brook trout don't count towards that. So that's the kind of thing I'm talking about there. Another conservation mode that I didn't mention at first on are the whitefish fisheries. And I was reminded of this yesterday in Fish Committee. We had some of these areas where whitefish have become a problem. Where we have steelhead fisheries, essentially the whitefish fishermen the steelhead fishermen have taken up whitefish fishing when what they're really doing is steelhead fishing. And so in those areas where we don't see a way around it, we've closed that. Where we think we can withstand that kind of pressure, if we have the taken the permits, for instance, we've gone to maintaining the whitefish fishery, but no bait is allowed, and you have to go by selective gear rules. So be a little more conservative there. Some good examples, if you go to page 43 of your stream deal. These are streams that are up in District 6. That would be Okanagan County. If you look at Gold Creek, the Lower Lost River, Wolf Creek, Buttermilk Creek on the Twist, that's actually on the next page, 44, and Lake Creek on the is that tributary team for that? On the Chewak. Those are all places that had been closed in the past, and we're proposing to move those to selective gear rules, catch and release for rainbow, where possible, we'll move to any brook trout enhanced catches. The other thing that we're going to do there, because we do have quite a few bull trout up in those areas, as well as down in the Methow where we already have these kind of fisheries, we're going to close those seasons on August 15th when you start to see more of the bull trout aggregates for spawning. And that'll go. Any questions?
Thank you. Questions? The fish committee's already seen this presentation, so I think you've got it perfected. No questions. Okay, thank you. So we've reached that point where we could have a break, but I think we want to continue working through this. It's going so smoothly. John, welcome.
Hi, I'm John Easterbrooks. I'm the Regional Fish Program Manager in Region 3. And but before I get into the region-specific proposals, going back to Chris's presentation on Columbia Basin proposals, the one about the March 1 openers on a number of lakes, Chris mentioned a lot of those are in Region 3. And if you should have a table in your notebooks that show the lakes, and they all start on March 1, but you'll notice that the Region 3 lakes have different closing dates. Instead of October 31st, you're seeing December 31st for the most part, and that's because we do stock some fish, some big Goldendale surplus brood stock in Region 3 lakes in November and December, and so it drives a real popular put-and-take trout fishery in the winter months. So, and you would hear a lot of negative feedback from the public if we closed those lakes on October 31st and made people wait until March to go fishing for those big brood stocks. So we've extended, so we'll have a 10-month season instead of 8 months. And the one there that's odd, for Powerline Lake in Franklin County, first Sunday in October it closes, and that's because it's on Windmill Ranch, and which is here in Franklin County and managed by the department. And we have waterfowl hunting on this walk-in lake, and this is to avoid conflict between fishermen and hunters because there's a limited number of parking places, and so we're closing just prior to the waterfowl hunting beginning to prevent that conflict. So with that, I'm just going to go to the five. We have five proposals. One of them is to expand two-pole fishing opportunities For game fish, where it's consistent with steelhead and bull trout conservation goals, provides additional recreation opportunity. And this is in the lower Yakima below Prosser and in the Hanford Reach of the Columbia River, primarily for smallmouth bass, catfish, and walleye. The walleye anglers really are pushing for two-pole. It enhances their opportunities to catch walleye. And these are in areas where last cycle we took the limits off on bass, catfish, and walleye in the anadromous waters. The two lake examples, Bumping and Rimrock, this is primarily directed toward kokanee, where we have really abundant populations of natural reproducing kokanee. Clay Elm Lake adjusts the size limit and daily limits for kokanee and remove the limit for non-native lake trout or mackinaw, brown trout, and eastern brook trout. This is to support the reintroduction of anadromous sockeye salmon into the upper Clay Elm Basin. We've been working with the Yakima Nation on this since 2009. The Yakima Basin Integrated Plan has an element in there to construct new state-of-the-art adult and juvenile fish passage at Clay Elm Dam to support this reintroduction. We're getting adults back from our initial stockings. Clay Elm had a 16 kokanee limit separate from the 5 trout daily limit in lakes. It was really geared to hatchery kokanee fry plants. Now that we've abandoned kokanee plants and are working to reestablish sockeye, we want to protect juvenile sockeye in the lake. We don't want them caught, at least at the extent they were in the past with a 16 fish limit. So we're eliminating that kokanee, proposing to eliminate that 16 kokanee limit, and basically include kokanee in the trout daily limit of 5. So it takes the daily harvest from 16 down to 5. And then we have a slot limit that 9 to 15 inches. And I should mention that we've been doing these by emergency rule for the past 2 or 3 years. This is a permanent effort now and an ongoing effort to reestablish sockeye. So it's time to make this a permanent rule, and our co-manager, the Yakima Nation, is supportive of that. But the slot limit, the minimum of 9 inches, fish below that size you wouldn't be able to harvest those, and those are primarily the juvenile sockeye pre-smolts before they're ready to migrate out of Clay Elm Lake and go to the ocean. The maximum size of 15 protects adult sockeye that the Yakima Nation is capturing at Priest Rapids Dam, and they're bringing donor stock from Priest Rapids over and putting them in the lake to spawn. 15 inches protects virtually all of the adults from being harvested prior to their opportunity to spawn. And so we've got a 6-inch window there, 12 inches plus or minus 3, and that gives the sport fishery some opportunity to catch some fish. And then again, we have Mackinaw in Clay Elm that were stocked back in the 20s by Kittitas County, and they became established and have been successfully reproducing since the early 1920s. They eliminated bull trout in the Clay Elm Basin. They outcompeted and eliminated them. They also tried stocking them in Cochise and Catchalus, but they didn't take and never became successful. And as a result, those two Kittitas County reservoirs are the only two that have bull trout in them. The Mackinaw also prey on the juvenile sockeye. So lifting the limit, removing the daily limit, allows anglers to take as many as they want. We also have eastern brook and brown trout in there. you know, this provides additional recreational opportunity, but also helps us with the Saco reintroduction. Similarly, at Cochise and Ketchikan, we had these 16 kokanee daily limits, and we're trying to align that with the more of the statewide limit for kokanee fisheries, which is 10. As you see there, the last bullet, these populations are supported by hatchery stocking. They don't have abundant natural production like we do at Bumping and Rimrock, where we would continue to have a 16 fish limit. We have stunted population at Rimrock and at Bumping, and we need to harvest more fish, but not the two upper Kittitas reservoirs. Okay, McKay Pond. We're proposing to allow fishing from non-motorized floating devices, such as pontoon boats and float tubes. This is a small pond in Kittitas County at the head of the Yakima Canyon, just south of Ellensburg. And this is a legacy thing. The owner around the lake didn't want boats on the lake, and so predates me, but for some reason the only way we had access to stock this pond and provide public fishing was if we limited it to bank angling. Well, ownership has changed, control has changed, and the new owners want to protect the riparian vegetation that is being beat down by the anglers, and they're taking clippers and cutting holes in the bushes to provide places to fish. And so we're going to allow people to use tubes and pontoon boats and car top boats and try to reduce the amount of bank angling, and but still keep providing some good opportunity. This one, Natchez River increased trout catch and release opportunity. This, as of yesterday, this proposal had garnered 156 comments in our online website, the most of any proposal statewide in this cycle. I expect it's 156 and counting. It's going to continue to, you're going to see a lot of comments on this, and you'll probably receive public testimony in November on this one. What we're proposing to do is extend catch and release fishing above the existing catch and release section that was adopted back in 2003 by the commission. We have a section from the Tioughton River at River Mile 17.5 up to Rattlesnake Creek. It's about 10.5 miles, and it's been the only catch and release portion for, you know, since 03, so 11 years. Some people would like to make the whole river from the mouth in Yakima to the headwaters about 45 miles catch and release. There are some people that don't want to see it change. What staff decided to do was a modified proposal. We're proposing to add the section above Rattlesnake Creek and leave the lower section from Tioughton down with existing harvest opportunity, which is a two trout limit, 12-inch minimum. That's all I'll say about that. Stream strategy. I'm not going to go to the book and point on any particular streams. It starts on page 64 in your book, the Region 3 Stream Strategy. We've been real proactive in past cycles. A lot of our anadromous waters and bull trout waters already were selective gear rules, so we had limited, we were a single point barbless and no bait. The big change is that we are in those waters, and in the book they'd be what we call the B code waters, where you can keep a couple fish, but you can't use bait. It's usually below an anadromous barrier, so you have steelhead or salmon or bull trout. Right now, it's the 8-inch, two fish 8-inch limit. our 8-inch minimum size. What we're proposing to do is increase the minimum size to 10, and we have data from the Prosser Dam Chandler Juvenile Evaluation Center on the Lower Yakima that shows that our steelhead smolts coming out of the Yakima Basin, 98% of them migrate at 10 inches or less. But that 8 to 10 inch harvest window allowed some anadromous steelhead to be harvested before they migrated. So if you, in your book, you'll see there's a lot of bee waters. Most of our tributaries to the Natchez and the Yakima are bee code, and there will be an increase to 10 inches. The other big change that's embedded in stream strategy, and then I'll be done, is, and Jeff mentioned it also in Region 2, that's winter whitefish season. You've got a table that wasn't in your book, a handout that was given to each of you, shows a table kind of summarizing the before and after what the winter whitefish seasons would look like in Region 3. And we're reducing them, the duration from anywhere from December, some of them run December to end of March, December to the end of February. We're going to basically cut it back to December and January, where we keep it and keep them all the same. The Natchez ran through the end of March. The Upper Yakima ran through the end of February. It was a kind of a mess. So we're trying to standardize where we retain it. And then in a number of places, we're just flat eliminating the winter whitefish season. And that's because of what Jeff was talking about. We've got people that are gaming the system that are the traditional winter whitefish fishermen. There are fewer and fewer of those. People are using this as an opportunity to catch adult steelhead or overwintering adult bull trout. And so this is the policy direction of stream strategy, is to protect these listed species. And so it's not strictly geared to protecting juvenile fish. We're also trying to protect adult fish. And this is a picture of some of those slot limit sockeye/kokanee from Clay Elm. And that 9 to 15 inch size range provides a pretty good fishery up there.
Mm-hmm.
So, any questions?
Okay. Commissioner Schmidden.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, John, very much. Yesterday, we were privy to be briefed on these issues, and I think John understated a little bit item number 24, the Natchez River, increasing the catch and release above, what is it, Rattlesnake Creek?
Correct.
He's received 156 comments. And I guess my question, because I forgot to ask this yesterday, is there any clear guidance in the 156 of which way you're recommending? Or obviously you're recommending something here, but...
We will. What we'll do is summarize those comments and we'll put them into a table and kind of look at percent pro, percent con, kind of where those comments are coming from. Some we can do it geographically by west side, Yakima Basin, or all of east side. We'll look at that. We're collecting comments through October 16th. I think by then we may be over 200. Initially, it was heavily in favor because the proponents rallied their troops and flooded the website. We've had several articles written by the Yakima Herald-Republic outdoor editor to bring this to public attention. That garnered a lot of attention. The locals that didn't turn up at the public meeting saw the article and said, wait a minute. And so we got a surge of no, don't do this. Don't make it catch and release. And now we've seen it go the other way again, because I think the proponents are reacting to the fact that those articles came out, and they said we better get on this again so that we can kind of outweigh the opposition. So it's pro, con, pro, and who knows how it's going to end up. But this is going to be a real tricky decision, I think, a little bit, what to do.
Just a follow-up comment. And John, you might be cautious of organized groups, especially outside of the area, beginning to weigh in. Catch and release brings a lot of interest from a lot of people.
There's a lot of fly groups on the west side that are weighing in, and all their members are rallied on this.
And you've got your local needs as well. So glad it's your decision, but we're curious where all the info comes from for the final.
You'll see that. Good. You will see that in November.
It's a beautiful, beautiful river, too.
It is. Attractive. And West Slope Cutthroat. And then that's what the big draw is, the West Slope Cutthroat fishery in the upper regions. Forest Service campgrounds and very scenic, and the guides are working it now, which was the intent of the original 10.5 mile that we did, the commission did in 03, was to pull some of the pressure off the Yakima Canyon and move it to the Natchez. And now they like it, and they want more of it.
Very good. Thank you. Cindy, your time.
Good afternoon. Cindy LaFleur, Region 5 Fish Program Manager. And most of the proposals in Region 5 are increased opportunity. So I'm going to move through them fairly quickly, I think. The first one is on the Cowlitz River, and we actually got two public proposals on this one. One wanted to remove remove barbless hook restriction for the entire river for all species, and the other one wanted to add two poles year-round. So we currently have a two-pole regulation in the lower river. So anyway, what we did is we merged those two, and we did a little bit of both. So we're proposing to relax the barbless hook rule for 2 months, during June and July. That's when there's no ESA-listed fish present, and it's a focus on hatchery summer steelhead, and then also allow the two-pole rule to continue upstream during that time frame as well. And what we found in the other areas where we've done the two-pole is that it hasn't really caused the problems in terms of congestion that we had thought about when we were first implementing it in small bits. And this one is another barbless hook relaxation proposal in the Elokamon and South Fork Tootle. Again, it's basically the months of June and July where there are no other ESA-listed fish present, and it's an attempt to harvest hatchery summer steelhead. The Elokamon River, this one is increased opportunity, change the opening date to late May instead of June. This was a proposal, I believe, by a member of the public. And Lake Skaniwa, again, is additional opportunity by extending the season. And I think that's the main thing that we're doing here, extending the season. Roland Lake is not a planted lake, so we are proposing to open this year-round because there's no fish planted in there on a regular basis. So it would follow those rules. And additional opportunity. And Salmon Creek is the creek that runs through the city of Vancouver. And when we adopted our gene bank, we had an extra steelhead to move. And so we put 20,000 more hatchery steelhead in this creek, doubling the plant in this river. And so we're trying to look for some upper release sites for some of those fish. So we're also trying to expand the fishing boundary, so increased fishing area to go along with those increased fish. On the Little Klickitat, this was a proposal by a member of the public and one of the members of one of our steelhead watershed groups. And this little part of the Little Klickitat River is open in the town of Goldendale. Thank you. Currently for juveniles only, and the proposal is let's open it for seniors as well. It's right in the city limits during this early opener time frame. So we thought that was a good idea. And then Swift Reservoir, this is lining up the trout and salmon regulations in this reservoir to 15 inches to alleviate the confusion about wild steelhead being caught. And for a stream strategy, the main thing that we're doing in Region 5, I mean, we're doing all the same strategies that all the other regions are, but for the mandatory hatchery steelhead retention, we're proposing it for all the tributaries in the region. So I told the Fish Committee we might hear something on this one. Most of the rivers have the segregated populations.
Okay, any questions, commissioners?
And then just to wrap up, just okay. This is a review of the timeline again, which Mr. Burley presented to you, but deadline on public comments, public hearing, and then rules would take effect in July of next year.
Okay. Any concluding remarks? Any, Commissioner Schmidt?
Chair, that was very well organized. Mm-hmm. It flowed faster. Nothing against Craig, because I like all that he does. But it was interesting to see each region present in the region.
I like that, too.
And so I give you credit, Craig, for masterminding it all, but it was a very good presentation.
Yeah, I like the way in which you're dividing up the large task. I think so far so good. Very clear, understandable. Thank you.